This is Michael Gonneau with Insight to Israel, brought to you by America's Web Radio. And I want to start off by thanking the guys at America's Web Radio for bringing the truth of the Jewish state to the patriot conservatives, the Christians, and the Christians that believe in this country, that want to know the truth, and that only get that truth through Insight to Israel and America's Web Radio. Guys, you're the best. Thank you we're at a one-year anniversary this month, in the month of March. It was a year ago when the guys in Atlanta, Georgia, where they're based out of, came to me and said, "Michael, we want to know the truth about Israel and what's going on." And you guys have been great ever since then. We've had our highs and lows, our ups and downs. I've never done this before and never thought I would ever do anything like this. And since then, it has increased and grown the numbers of listeners. Out of 26,000 radio shows, Insight to Israel is in the top 20%. And thank you, guys. You're the best. Thank you for your long-suffering, your patience, and yet the joy that we share together in bringing this truth to the American people. I also want to say thank you, thank you, thank you 1,000 times, and it's never enough, to Americans that give to Hershey's for Heroes, where they're sending a chocolate bar that's not sold in here in Israel, with a note on each one thanking the soldiers for defending the Jewish state. You'll never know the morale boost that it brings to these soldiers. Literally, they tell me, "Michael, you're not Jewish? Why do you love us so much?" And my response is, if it had not been for God giving you Torah, the Pentateuch in Christianity, the Mosaic Law at Mount Sinai, I would not have a constitution or Bill of Rights, because it's those principles on which my country, the United States of America, was founded upon. So I owe God my eternal gratitude for my eternal gratitude for my internal freedom, and I owe the Jewish people for my external freedom. I owe it to them as an American and a free man to fight as they defend their country and its sovereignty and security. So thank you, Americans, for sending that message. And if you want to be a part of Hershey's for Heroes, you can Google in Hershey's for Heroes or do it in Facebook, and you can see the instructions on how to send or email me at mganoe at insighttoisrael.com, and email me about how to send the soldiers Hershey's for Heroes. We need more chocolate bars with the note on each one. There's a lot of soldiers here. With that being said, moving forward, I am in the leftist hated, Muslim occupied, Jewish owned, by the hand. You know, it's almost like I'm here with a good friend of mine, Ellie Posh. Ellie, thank you for being on the show.
A pleasure.
We've known each other for, I think, about a year.
Pretty much.
And we've had some good right-wing discussions, brother.
No? We've had some good, straightforward, real discussions.
Wow.
I don't think those are right-wing.
Wow. There's nothing like truth.
There you go.
Nothing like it. I eat it like a Chinese buffet, brother. Mm-mm-mm. And then I pick it out of my teeth with an ideological toothpick. It's great stuff. I am here with Ellie Posh in Judea and Samaria, otherwise known to the rest of the world that doesn't have their thinking straight, the West Bank. Ooh. The occupied territories. Ooh. Well, that's what they think, but we know better.
Right.
Ellie, thank you for being here with me, brother.
Thank you for having me.
Ellie, we're here in your wine store.
Right.
In Efrat. And I've been here a number of times. Actually, my first interview a year ago this month was with Zahava Englard. We actually did a video you can find on YouTube called Jaunt Through Judea. J-A-U-N-T, Jaunt Through Judea. And I got some real truth about what goes on here. We even saw the Muslims attacking the soldiers. I don't call them Palestinians. They're Muslims, straight up. Attacking the soldiers. We got that all on cameras. Amazing. I'd never... You know, you see it on the media in the States, but you never see it firsthand. It's amazing. And then I interviewed the mayor of Efrat, Oded...
Ravivi.
Ravivi. Great man. Very straightforward. He's strong. mm-hmm. strong in the greatness of Ephrat. Now, well, I'll start off, Ellie. You're American born.
Canadian.
Canadian born. Okay, that's something altogether different. And Canada seems to be taking a strong stand with the Jewish state.
Proud to be one.
Proud to be one. And I, you know,
on both sides.
So, if you don't mind me asking, I know this is not a touchy subject with you since we're men of truth. How old are you?
40.
40. We're close in age. I'm 43. So, you grew up in Canada.
Yeah, I did.
Where did you grow up?
Toronto.
In Toronto. What experiences transpired in your life that would lead you at what age back to Israel?
That's an interesting question. I grew up, my first trip to Israel was when I was 17.
Teglit?
No.
No?
No, I came with a youth group called NCSY.
Okay.
It was not known as a Zionist youth group. It was just a youth group that wanted to bring people back to their roots and it helped people see more of the religious side of Judaism. And as part of that, you can't really go back to your roots without coming to Israel.
Right.
So their summer trip came to Israel, and we had an advisor on the trip who took us from Eilat in the south to Rosh HaNikra in the north with a Old Testament in our hand, in his hand.
Wow.
And it, literally everywhere we went, he was like, okay, you see this sentence over there? That's where we're standing. So that really was my first experience here.
Yeah.
At that point, I was in between my last 2 years of high school at that point. And at that point, I decided that after I finished high school, I was going to come back to learn here in religious seminary.
Wow.
And as part of that religious seminary...
Now, let me ask you a question. Did
sure.
Did you grow up religious?
Yeah.
Okay.
I did.
Okay.
As part of that religious seminary, we went to on a trip called March of the Living, which takes...
Could you describe to us what March of the Living is?
Yeah. Basically, the trip takes Jewish people from all over the world, from every different country, and takes them into Poland for a week.
Wow.
To go through and see the history of the Holocaust.
Wow.
And that's basically what happens. So you start off, you go into one concentration camp, and by the end you've gone through five or six of them. And it's called March of the Living, as opposed to March of Death, which people had to go from one camp to the other during the Holocaust.
Now, I want to stop you here. I said wow about four times.
Right.
My mother listened to the show one time, and she goes, in jest, Michael, you don't have to say wow so much. Well, be here and listen to what you're saying. I can't find words to describe in the English vernacular.
Right.
Hebrew, I'm still working on. What was that like for you to be there, to see that?
It basically, how do I say it? It's on the one hand, it's a life-changing experience.
Right.
On the other hand, you kind of walk through it with the attitude of, I'm not really here, I'm just looking down on what's going on.
Right.
Like, you know, like an out-of-body experience kind of thing.
Yeah.
I managed to maintain a journal throughout my whole trip.
Wow.
And just writing down, you know, my thoughts at the end of every day and things like that.
You still have this journal?
I do. I do.
Have you published it or anything?
I haven't published it. Basically, once a year on Holocaust Remembrance Day, I read through it.
Yeah.
But basically, that trip, to me, really was one of those points in your life when you can sit there and say, that 1 minute, that one thing changed my whole life.
Right.
Right? I don't know how many people have that in their life when they can actually say, that decision I made or that particular moment made all the difference in the world.
The Bible talks about, it's a monument. Abraham, wherever he went, he was known for building altars.
Right.
And where he went, he built an altar and thanked God for it. And
right.
It was a life altering.
Right. But at the same time, I've been in positions where things happen and you basically turn around and say, wow, you know, thank God for that and making that happen and whatever. That's not what I'm talking about.
Right.
Right? This is literally that one particular moment.
Yeah.
Basically brought me back to the continuation of my life, where if I had not gone to that moment, the continuation would have been a completely different direction.
Right.
Okay, so basically what would have happened, like what happened with 99% of all of my friends, is they came for the year, they did their thing in seminary, they went on the trip, or they didn't go on the trip, and then they ended up going back, and they're currently living in Toronto or New York or Montreal or wherever they're living. My trip, my experience was a little bit different. My grandmother was a survivor of the Holocaust. My grandmother was at that point in hospital and never got out of it after that. And her one request to me was, go into Auschwitz when you're there and pray for me and prove to them that they were wrong and that they did not succeed. So we had 6,000 people on this trip all praying for my grandmother in the middle of Auschwitz 50 years after the Holocaust happened. And that, to me, made a huge impact in my life. My impact basically came to, I'm going back to Israel. And you have to understand the timing of the trip. It happens right after Passover, which is the holiday of redemption.
Right.
Okay? We come back to Israel in time for Yom HaZikaron, which is Israeli Memorial Day.
Yeah.
And the following day is Independence Day. So we're going from the utmost destruction to the utmost creation of the State of Israel.
Yeah.
In a matter of hours.
Yeah.
That is an unbelievable emotional roller coaster.
Yeah, I've experienced that.
My response to that was basically that.
Go ahead.
Sorry. My response to that was basically that if you're in a situation where you see destruction, and you see that some of the leaders of your religion perished, and little kids who struggled with sneaking out of ghettos to steal food and bring it back to give people life,
and
they didn't have the capability of coming to the promised land,
right.
And I do.
Right.
How do I not?
Right. Wow.
How do I not?
Wow. I want to interrupt you there for a second.
Okay.
I apologize. I want to focus on one thing here, and then we'll move forward. And you and I have had this discussion.
Mm-hmm.
After 2,000 years of exile, after this country was built on the bronze, the brains, and the blood of the Jewish people, even pre-48, the Haganah, the Palmach, the Edsel. If you are listening to this radio show, you need to do some research into these folks. Maybe they weren't so quote-unquote religious, but the hand of God. Solomon said the heart of a king is in the hand of God, and he turns it whatsoever he will. That means that even each one of us, it's not that we don't have free will, free moral agents, but God does whisper to the heart and draws even when we don't realize it. And Americans need to research. And American Jews, you had better listen up. I'm going to state this emphatically. Don't you dare, even if you wear a kippah, don't you open your mouth about God. Don't you talk about God when you sit in direct disobedience to Hashem in the United States, in other countries. You lead your people home. You become the Moses of your flock, of your synagogue. You lead them home while these people here stand and they fight for this country daily and shed their blood. While these young soldiers go into the military right out of high school, no enjoyment of college, no education. They know they must fight, and then once they get out of the military, they serve in the reserves till they're 45, 1 month out of the year. It's an injustice done by those who live in the diaspora, who are able-bodied and able-minded, and they refuse to come home. I'll leave it at that. Sorry, brother.
That's okay. So my thing was, you know, Moses, the greatest leader in history.
Right.
Not necessarily of just the Jewish people.
Right.
Right? Did not have the capability of coming into this land.
That's it.
How would I not come? So then it turned to me and I said, listen, if I want to be in a situation where I don't, where, you know, what would keep the Holocaust from happening again? This was the next question I asked myself. And the only answer that came to my mind is that now there's a country that will house us and an army that will defend us. And if that's the case, how do I not participate? If I want them to be there when I need them, I should be there when they need me.
Absolutely. Wow.
So I came and I went. And that was basically it. And I spent 4 years here in that seminary and my army service.
Thank you for your service, brother. You deserve a Hershey's for heroes.
Please, that was ancient history. And basically when I went back to Toronto for university, I continued my education in food and beverage and I mean, that how I got into that is a completely different story, but we'll start it off in a second.
Let me understand this timeline. You came at 17 with the youth group.
Right.
You saw what was going on. Your life was impacted. You then
went back to finish high school.
Went back to finish high school. Then you went to seminary.
Yeah.
And you
did, and at the age of 18, through seminary, went to Poland.
Went to Poland.
And then I came back, and I was here till the age of 21.
Okay, and you served in the Army.
I served in the Army, and then I went back to Toronto.
How old were you when you went back to Toronto?
23.
Wow.
22.
What a journey.
Now, there's a sideline that goes along with this.
Okay.
When I started high school in ninth grade in Toronto, in a religious school, they were going around for student council, trying to figure out what kind of fundraising they could do, like every other high school does. And it was coming time for Passover, and they said, we need a great idea for a fundraiser for Passover. And I said, well, Passover, everybody drinks wine, so just sell wine. How could you miss that opportunity?
Right.
So that basically turned into a whole big thing. How do you do it? Legalities, we're all minors, da-da-da-da-da. And I basically organized, we got an order form from a wine store, we handed it out to all the people we knew, we collected it back and did the deliveries.
Wow.
And then took percentage of the cut.
Just a little common sense business.
Just a little common sense business. Okay? Every vacation after that throughout high school, I worked in the wine store in their warehouse schlepping boxes of wine.
Now, I want to clarify something for the listeners.
Yeah.
Because in Christianity, understandably, and especially the way the United States is, things like wine and alcohol are very abused. It's very unfortunate. In fact,
right.
In some of the countries I've lived in, it's very sad. I've seen children. But wine is seen in a different light here in Israel.
I won't say it's seen in a different light in Israel.
Okay.
I'll say it's seen in a different light in Judaism.
Okay.
And it goes back to ancient religions. Okay.
Thank you.
And the reason I'm saying that is because wine throughout history has always been used as a religious product. So if you're doing your sacrifices, there's wine involved. And if you're doing your wedding, there's wine involved. And if you're doing your circumcision, there's wine involved. And if you're doing... It's a religious item.
Right.
So much so that it, on a religious level, outweighs every other item of food or drink to the point where... And I'm not talking alcohol. I'm talking specifically wine.
Right.
Okay? To the point where when it comes to making blessings on your food, if you've made a blessing on wine... that supersedes everything else.
Wow.
Okay? If there's grapes on the table, if there's wine on the table, that's what you are required to make the blessing on first, before everything else.
Yeah. I've noticed that at Shabbat dinners I've been to.
Right. Right. So that was basically it. And I ended up working in the wine store throughout high school.
Wow.
Okay? Now, I finished here in Israel. I went back to university. I studied food and beverage. I opened a catering company, an event planning company in Toronto. Specifically with the idea of paying back student loans so that I could get back to Israel. Because
wow.
After you're here for 4 years...
it changes your life.
You don't go anywhere else.
Right.
10 years after I left Israel, I was in Toronto in university paying off student loans, whatever. 10 years later, I came back. That is 10 years ago now.
So let me see if I understand this correctly, and I apologize.
Yeah.
You went to yeshiva school.
Right. High school.
High school.
Right.
Okay. And then you...
I came to post-high school yeshiva here.
Which was how many years?
4 years.
4 years. And then you served 3 years in the military?
No. It's part of the Yeshiva Army program.
Ah, okay. So you have a combined program.
Right.
That's it's good for the listeners to know that, to understand that. And then you went back to Canada for more school.
Right, for college, university.
For college. Wow, great. Okay. Yeah. You spent a lot of time doing a lot of stuff.
Well, you know, listen... God's, who was it? A rabbi of mine once told me, I asked him, I said, you know, you've got 9 kids, you've got a community that you're the rabbi of, you teach in 2 different schools, and you visit all the sick people in the hospitals. How do you have time for everything? And he said, the best time, the most productive time in a person's life is the last minute.
Mm.
So if you just have everything last minute, you're going to be very productive.
Right.
So I did.
So you spent time paying off your student loans and come back to Israel. How long was that again?
8-9 years.
8-9 years.
Okay. And then I came back here 10 years ago. July was 10 years, so it's 10 and a half years ago.
Wow.
And I continued with what I learned in school. But I wasn't doing food aspect, I was doing logistics aspect. Now,
okay.
If you're studying food and beverage, a lot of catering, a lot of event planning, it's a lot of logistics. So I ran for a company that most Americans will know named IDT, and I ran their Israeli operations, the logistics side of their Israeli operations, all the corporate events and the employee benefits and all the logistics for operating the company. And then I left that. I became the chief operations officer for a food supplement company in Herzliya.
Herzliya is down around Tel Aviv.
Right. And then I turned around and I said, you know what? It's just not working for me. I really don't want to be here. So I walked into my boss's office and fired him.
Right.
No, I literally, we had a good relationship. So I walked into his office and I said, listen, it's really not working out. I think you should go home. And he said, what? And I said, well, it's either you or me. So I left. And that day, 2.5 years ago, 3 years ago now, somebody sent me an email that said... It was just an article written up about the Israeli wine industry, and I said, you know what, time to get back into it. And I got back into the wine industry with... it originally just started with small boutique wineries, getting them exported into Canada. And now it turned... Then it developed into opening a wine club, Winery of the Month programs, and all the stuff that normal wine clubs do. And then got into giving tours for tourists. So this was the point where I got to connect three of my lifelong loves.
Yeah.
Okay. I get to travel this amazing country.
Amazing. It is amazing.
I get to drink a lot of really good wine. And I, at the same time, my wine tours are connected with the biblical history of this country.
Yeah.
So the same as my original tour, which made me fall in love with it from the beginning. Every time I go on a wine tour, I take the Old Testament with us, and you know, most people will say we're going to do a wine tour in the Beit Shemesh area, right? And my wine tour in that area is called the Biblical Wine Tour around Samuel 1.
Wow.
Okay, because the whole story happened in that area.
Right.
Right? Wow. So basically, like,
Samuel the prophet, just to clarify.
Right. So as we're standing outside the winery, I'll point to the street signs and I'll say, okay, see the name of that street sign where we're standing and the towns that are continue down the hall, this highway? Now here's where it's written in the Old Testament.
Wow.
And this is the story that we're walking on that ground right now.
Because, you know, what's unique about this country, and we used to do this in the U.S., but our country got so big. For example, my street that I grew up in West Virginia is called Paula Boulevard. Well, there's no real meaning behind it, but here, all the streets have a very historical significance to them.
Right.
And maybe explain a little bit, talk a little bit about that.
Are we talking here in Efrat specifically, or
yeah.
In Israel in general?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't matter. But since you live in Efrat, let's talk about
it. I live in Jerusalem, but my store is in Efrat. No, this country my brother lives in a town called Shiloh.
Yeah, we know that from the Bible, yeah.
Right. So that's
folks who don't, you need to look it up.
That's where the Old Testament was. The tabernacle was, right? It was the capital of Israel for 400 years. That's longer than the United States has been around.
Right.
Right, that happens to be in what your president calls the occupied West Bank, but that was our capital longer than the entire history of the United States.
Yeah.
Okay. And basically we're in a position where the names of every single street in that town had something to do with the tabernacle, whether it's the spices that were used in the incense, or the clothing that the high priest wore, or things that happen around the tabernacle. Like, all of that's there. The names of the towns in that area, Achia HaShiloni, which was a guy named in Shmuel Aleph, in Samuel 1, right? Talking about the prophet Samuel.
Wow.
So Achia HaShiloni was a guy that was involved in the tabernacle, and the town right next door is called Achia HaShiloni, named after him. The next town is called Eli, which is Eli the high priest, who was the high priest in that time of Samuel 1.
Wow.
Like, so the names of the towns, the names of the streets are all very, very historical, biblically.
Yeah.
In Jerusalem, in the area where I live, they're all named after rabbis from the Talmud.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
From the oral law. So like, the names of the streets here are very, very historical.
You know, it's amazing. I'm glad you pointed this out, because this is something I didn't know. Now, I did know that all the streets had a, you know, a meaning behind it, but to go into that kind of detail as far as things that were in the tabernacle, when you said the incense,
right?
That's very detailed. That's very
right.
It's a memory. It's not just a memory, but something that actually took place. And to keep in your memory
right. Those
things, when people look at those streets,
right. It
brings it back to their mind.
Exactly.
This is what the Bible says.
Right.
This is what street. That's fascinating.
I mean, you can go into that part of the Old Testament, and read the story of Hannah. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Hannah was Samuel's mother.
Right.
Right. And in order, she was barren, and she wanted to have a child, so she went to Eli the high priest and said, and went through this whole entire prayer, which, by the way, single girls who are looking to get married and start families go to the site of the foundation of the tabernacle.
Wow.
And read that prayer. That's considered a big thing for us.
Now, if I'm not mistaken,
one of the streets there is called Tfilat Chana, or the prayer of Chana.
Wow. Now, if I'm not mistaken, Samuel's mother, you could see her lips
right. Move,
but there was
no sound coming out because
right. She
was mumbling the prayer.
That's fascinating.
That's exactly what we're talking about. So the street's named after her. That's the street my brother lives on. Is the prayer of Hannah.
Now, you know, this comes, and I don't want to veer off, but I think it's something that's very important, what people don't. You know, there's a lot of leftists, and it always has been through centuries. Maybe they weren't so-called labels leftists, but they were, certainly were anti-Israel, anti-Zionist, anti-Semitic. And the sense, in this sense, you know, there's all these conspiracy theories that go around, oh, it's the Zionist conspiracy theory to take over the world. People don't really understand what Zionism is, that it's stems from a biblical perspective.
Right.
Because Zionism is mentioned all throughout the Old Testament.
Well, this is one of the things that I was saying right at the beginning when you introduced me, right? I'm not right wing, okay?
Right.
I do believe that the Palestinians, if there is such a thing,
right,
are occupying my land. And I understand that because of the biblical promise that went from God to Abraham to Isaac to Jacob, not to Ishmael and
right,
not to Esau, right,
right? And not to Muhammad.
Okay? That came through and said, this is who I'm going to give the land to. Right? We're taught that one of the reasons the whole purpose of the Bible, the Old Testament, was to give us methods of life. It's not a history book.
Right? Even though history's involved.
History's involved for sure, but it's to give us lessons on how to live our life.
Right.
From the 613 commandments.
Very good point.
Learning lessons of how people lived so that we understand how to live ourselves.
Do you hear that thunder?
Yes.
Do you mind if I stop? Right now, we're coming at the end of the wintertime. Spring is just about to come in, and after, you don't normally get, because this is a desert area.
Right.
Pretty much the whole country is.
Right.
And you don't get rain until, the rain pretty much stops after Pesach.
Or just before. Yeah.
Just before, and that's Passover.
Right.
And I want our listeners to understand this, because even though we had the big snow back in December, and again, I don't want to veer off, but I think it's important for them to know, that snow, even though it caused some problems, is very significant because there was great flooding down on the Gaza Strip.
Well, I'm going to tell you a great story about the snow afterwards.
Okay.
When your listeners are going to hear it, they're going to fall off their chairs. But here's the, getting back to where we were before.
Yeah, let's go ahead.
Where were we before?
We were talking about
the lessons of learning from the Bible.
Yeah.
Okay. So the big question that we all ask when we're in second and third grade starting to learn the Old Testament is, well, if we're supposed to be learning lessons of life, why are we starting with the creation of the world? What lessons are we going to get out of the creation of the world? The Old Testament starts with, in the beginning, there was heaven and earth. There was light and dark, right? So why start over there? Why not start with when we became a nation and when we're coming out of Egypt?
Right.
And the answer that the main commentators of the Old Testament give is one reason, and one reason only. And that reason is specifically to say that God created the world, and he can give whichever part of it he wants to whomever he wants.
Absolutely. Wow.
So that comes through Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and that's where we are. So when I look at it, I don't consider myself right-wing. I consider myself taught in history. My history is in all parts of this country, West Bank, East Bank,
right,
wherever you want to look at it. And therefore, since that's the cultural heritage of my people, how would I ever possibly not live there?
Right. Wow. It's very powerfully put. Listen, we're going to come back. And, Ellie, wow, we've got some good stuff here. I've been learning a lot just sitting here, and I've been here a year and a half. All right. We're going to come back and talk some more with Ellie about
wine.
About wine and what he does here. Thank you for listening. We'll be right back.
Did you miss the show that you really wanted to hear? All of our programs are available for download on AmericasWebRadio.com and on iTunes. You can listen to your favorite programs on AmericasWebRadio.com anytime you like.
This is Michael Gannot with Insight to Israel. Every day, the Israeli Defense Force finds itself on the front line of the war with the militant arm of Islam. Surrounded by enemies from within and without, they fight for the only Jewish state. Military service is mandatory, ladies serving 2 years and men serving 3 right out of high school. While young people in other democracies are busy traveling or attending university, Israeli men and women gear up for basic training. In a world of heads of state, politicians, ambassadors, diplomats, and a leftist media, many times our voice at the grassroots level is drowned out. So we started an ongoing project called Hershey's for Heroes. Patriot conservatives from all over the U.S. are sending Hershey's chocolate bars with a note of thanks for defending Israel. Won't you join us by sending a sweet message to the IDF? For information, please see my Facebook page at Michael Ganot. Thank you, God bless Patriot conservatives, and God bless Israel in her struggle for sovereignty and security. And we're back. This is Michael Ganot with Insight to Israel with Eli Posch in Efrat in Judea and Samaria. And wow, great first half.
Thank you.
Great
Thank
first
you.
Half. What's this we got here, a little chocolate?
This is a little chocolate. This is a great story of this chocolate. The guys that own it live here in the area, in a little town called Bat Ayin.
Now, what's that mean?
Bat Ayin is the daughter of the eye. Now, I don't understand why they name a town that.
Yeah. There's obviously a reason.
Yeah, for sure. The funny part about it is these two young guys, they're in their late 30s, they own a cocoa plantation in Brazil.
Really?
And they import the cocoa beans to Israel, and they manufacture this heavenly, heavenly chocolate.
About to have a piece of this. Wow.
This is actually white chocolate with coffee.
Wow. Wow. That's delicious.
This is not
and I'm not a big fan of stuff with coffee in it.
This is not...
Except for real coffee.
This is not your Reese's peanut butter stuff.
Wow,
this is
wow. That is...
This is 70% pure cocoa.
Wow. That's amazing.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to get into what you do and why you do it and what goes on here. You have a beautiful store.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about what you...
Okay, so
we can even move around a bit.
All right. The store is really more of a...
When did you first open?
The wine club opened 2.5 years ago.
Okay.
And that's the main function of the business. The store opened because I had a bunch of people, and it got to the point where originally... let me take a step back.
Okay.
Originally, we started where... I would pick the winery of the month. I would advertise it to the members, who are paid members, by the way. I would advertise, and the purpose of the wine club is really to introduce them to new wineries that they may have never met before, because some of them are really, really small.
Yeah.
But what we did is we basically, I would pick the winery, send out a notice, these are the wines from the winery of the month. They would send it in to me, I would order from the winery and deliver it. And that was the basic business. And it got to a point where some of the wines are so good that people months later would say, remember that wine that we tasted 3 months ago? I really want 3 more bottles of that.
Yeah.
But no winery is going to ship me 3 bottles.
Right. Right.
So it got to the point where I needed a warehouse. And so what you're looking at, although it functions as a store, this is a warehouse.
It's amazing.
This is my warehouse for the wine club. It's also my center of operations for everything else we do. So if I have, for example, winery tours, or I'm doing tasting events, or I'm doing winemakers' dinners, or anything like that, this is my center of operations. It's my office is the main counter, and that's basically where I do all my work. And that's it. So the wine club opened 2.5 years ago. The store I opened in August.
Now you have a store in Jerusalem and then here in
Efrat. Just here.
Just here in Efrat.
Just here. We currently deal with 28 different wineries and almost 300 different products.
Wow. And how many bottles am I looking at here, do you think?
No idea.
It's a lot.
Not a clue.
Hundreds and hundreds of bottles.
Yeah, well, if we have 300 different products, assume we have just under a case of each because things sell.
And how many wineries do you say are represented?
By the way, so if we're talking 300 products at just under a case, we're talking about 3,000 bottles approximately.
Wow.
In the store right now.
Wow.
How many wineries are represented? 28 wineries right now.
And they're all centered here in Israel.
They're all Israeli wineries.
Wow, that says a lot because Israel has is known, especially from the Golan, is known for its worldwide award winning wines.
Right.
So
they brought me the wrong size clams, so I'll have them today tomorrow.
That's okay.
Okay.
No rush.
So Ellie, we have a customer here. Great. What's your name, ma'am?
Lisa Huxton.
Lisa Huxton. Now, Lisa, you're in here to buy some wine.
Yes.
Why do you buy from this store? What makes not only this store, but Israeli wine, you know, what you desire for all of your Seder dinners and...
Well, why would I buy wine other than Israeli wine?
Exactly. I know that sounds like a simplistic question, but...
It's a simplistic answer, too.
No, exactly.
No, but she's 100% right. Our wines win awards in every single competition we go to around the world. Ramat HaGolan, as you said before, was a very high-quality wine. They took best winery in the world in Italy and in France 2 years running. So really, when we have that kind of quality, we don't really need to be looking for other stuff.
Right. Ellie, if you don't mind me asking, you're American-born, I take it.
Yeah, but raised here.
Raised in Israel. So you've been here for how many years?
About half my life.
Wow. So you've seen a lot since you've been here.
It's about 15 years.
Thank you. I have to explain that to my kids now who are in their 40s.
Well, great. Hey, Ellie, I'm glad you come in here. And, you know, a lot of Americans want to know the truth about Israel. And so they get it from Insight to Israel, which is heard in Europe and the United States and here in Israel also. So
well,
you have a great country.
They should come here and see things with their own eyes.
Say it again?
They should come here and see things with their own eyes.
Especially all this good wine in this building. This is great stuff. Well, Ellie, thank you. You're a great
Lisa.
Lady.
Aliza. I'm Ellie.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm sorry. What did you say your name was, man?
Aliza.
Aliza. It's very close. Yeah. She's just a female version, you know?
Not quite.
So you're getting ready for Pesach.
Right.
And you have some great gifts here that you've put together, some gift bags and baskets.
Right.
So I'm seeing some of these cookies. You have other people here in your community involved. You've got these cookies shaped like crowns
right.
and masks.
So in the packages that I put together here, we have the cookie for Purim, which is our version of Halloween. Or Halloween's your version of our Purim, whichever way you want to go.
Well,
it's when we dress up and we...
Even
you know.
Christians try to refrain from celebrating Halloween.
Okay.
But Purim is...
Purim is based on... Listen, if you want... Here's the easiest way to understand Judaism.
Okay.
There was a war. We won, we feast. We lost, we fast.
We won, we feast.
We lost, we fast.
Okay.
Okay, that's the way it goes.
And sackcloth and ashes, no doubt.
Right, exactly. So now basically we have the Festival of Purim that's coming up, which is commemorative of the exile to Babylon.
Queen Esther.
That's exactly what we're talking about. So one of the things that we do is everybody dresses up and has fun. Okay, now dressing up is masks, it's crowns, it's this, it's that, all kinds of stuff. And we have a commandment to give gifts of food to at least two people. Okay, so we have packages in all kinds of different sizes. The one we have that we're looking over here is cookies. There's four cookies in here, two crowns, two masks. They're actually, for the people who are listening, they look actually like gingerbread men, like the same kind of icing on the outside of the cookie. Made from a guy who used to be my... When I told you I had a catering company in Toronto, and
yeah.
he supplied me with all of my pedophores and baked goods in Toronto at his bakery there.
Wow.
He has since moved to Israel. He lives across the highway, next door to my parents. And basically, he opened his own bakery called Cookie Crave. So Cookie Crave provides all of our cookies needs for the packages. Holy Cacao, the chocolate. And what a great name, Holy Cacao. Right? It's the name of the chocolate company that we tasted the chocolate from.
Yeah.
So they're here in a community across the highway.
Wow.
And the wine I'm doing, this particular wine, is actually from Mount Blessing, Old Testament, where they split the nation and half got cursed, like on the mountain curses, and half got blessings.
Yeah.
And this is from the Mount of Blessings.
Wow.
So that's where that wine comes from. So we're really, you know, trying to pull it in from all different sides and all different things and really connecting it from all kinds of avenues.
Yeah, because what you're doing is, look, I last year I was here for Pesach, and it's where you actually read the story of Queen Esther in Hebrew.
Purim,
I'm sorry, right. I apologize.
That's okay.
Pesach is Passover.
Right, Exodus from Egypt.
Exodus, that's where you painted the blood on the doorposts, and then the death...
Blood of goats.
The blood of goats.
Right.
Thank you for clarifying that, for all those who are shallow or either just don't know the Bible. And the death angel passed over as one of the judgments on Pharaoh and all the children.
Right.
Pharaoh got what he deserved, but it saved the Jewish people.
Right.
And it showed a miracle that God...
There was a situation, we won, we feast.
Right, and that's what this holiday is all about.
Exactly.
And it is fantastic. I've been here, and celebrated. I have to say that since I've been in this country, overall, people have been fantastic and treated me with the best hospitality. And that was an experience I had last year that was...
Well, here we go. Back to what I said before. And I love how things just, you know, keep coming back and everything is fits into place.
Yeah.
But one of the things you mentioned was part of what the Bible is supposed to teach us is a method of life.
Right.
Right? And one of the lessons we learn out of the Bible is that to treat the stranger in our land nicely because we were strangers in the land of Egypt.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
So, there you go, man.
You know, it's I went to seminary, and I you know, I studied the Old Testament, and you know, we forget as people, but just by the fact of you saying that is refreshing because it brings so much of what I learned. But as a man, sometimes I forget,
right.
and that's beautiful. I think there's so many principles, even as Christians. When we stand with the Old Testament, but many times we forget those spiritual teachings.
Right.
You know? I'm going to have another piece of this chocolate.
You do that. I'm going to grab a couple of bottles off the shelf.
Okay.
I'm going to sit here and I'm going to show them to you. And
okay.
You can film them afterwards for your Facebook group. He's not kissing me. That's the chocolate. I'm going to pull up a couple ones to give you a little bit of a different... environment of what we do here.
Okay.
Okay. I'll make sure you get some pictures of the bottles so that you can put them on your Facebook.
Yeah. Great. Great.
And then I'll show you a little bit about what makes this country so unique in terms of its wine industry.
This chocolate is amazing, amazing. And we're going to put the website up in case you're in the United States. Can we order anything from you?
JerusalemWineClub.com.
JerusalemWineClub.com. We're going to put up the website.
Okay.
When we advertise.
Perfect.
Your show for Insight to Israel.
We're going to...
Herodian? Wow.
I'm going to grab two more.
Now, let me ask you if you can answer this.
Yeah.
What is... This is Yarden wine. What does Yarden mean? I've met some soldiers.
Yarden. Otherwise, the Hebrew pronunciation Yarden. Of Jordan. It's the Jordan River. That's where it's named after.
Really?
Yeah.
So, like, I have a friend of mine. She's in the Army.
Mm-hmm.
Her name is Yarden. I call her Yarden. I don't know why I say it like that, but I didn't know.
Right.
So her actual name, translated, means Jordan River.
Right.
That's beautiful.
Okay, so what I've done here is I've pulled... I've pulled here five different wine regions in Israel. Now, we're talking again about an island, about a country that's smaller than Rhode Island.
Right.
We have five wine regions.
Currently smaller than Rhode Island. Just drop a glass, okay.
Okay, and we are smaller than Rhode Island, but we have five different wine regions. The five different wine regions are come because of different climate, different soil. Okay, so the first one we're going to look at is a winery in Kadesh Barnea, is the name of the town. Kadesh Barnea is mentioned 9 times in the Old Testament. It's the location where the spies came in.
Kadesh Barnea, and yeah.
Okay, it's the location where the spies from the desert came in to spy out the land of Israel before the Jews came in.
Yes, and some came back with a good report, some came back with a bad.
Now, you remember what they came back with on their shoulders?
Grapes.
See the symbol?
Yeah, wow. Okay.
The symbol on the wrapping is the grapes. Now, you'll see that the label is sand dunes.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason is because Kadesh Barnea, or how do you pronounce
Kadesh,
it?
Kadesh Barnea in English, yeah.
Is basically on... It's basically desert sand, the whole place. So we grow grapevines in desert sand.
Amazing.
Okay? And it's unbelievable.
Wow.
It's pretty crazy. We grow grapevines in desert sand. You can literally stick your hand into them. It's like standing on the beach and just watch the sand drizzle through your fingers.
Wow.
And that's one wine region that we have.
Now, let me clarify the story. It's a beautiful story because... You know, the negative guys came back and said, oh, there's giants in the land. God said to take it.
Right.
God said take it.
Right.
Take it.
Right.
And they came back with a bad report, and the other guys came back, even with the evidence of the size of the grapes, and they were still negative.
Right.
Oh, we can't do it. There's a beautiful story.
Let me ask you a question.
Okay.
And I'm not throwing my politics on anybody here.
No, it's okay.
But here's my question. Today you have Jewish people living all kinds of places in this world. And the biggest argument for Jews not coming back to Israel is the giant economy, or lack thereof, because it's easier to find a job where they live.
Right.
Which, by the way, is no longer true because we have the strongest economy on the planet.
5.6% unemployment rate.
Which is nothing.
Yeah.
Okay. Then we have the other one, which is all the violence and the Arabs and the terrorists. God said, go back to your land.
Mm.
Why are you still fighting the darn giants? Just asking.
That's that buffet of truth, brother.
I'm just asking.
Except it's coated with a little chocolate now. Okay, so you got your next one.
So that's the Kaddish Barnea. The next one is Gvaot Winery. Gvaot in Hebrew means mountaintops. Okay? So their series are Sartaba, which used to be... Now, Sartaba has one wine in the series. Sartaba was the mountain, in going back to ancient times, before we had a written calendar, when they needed to know the new moon, when they saw the new moon, so they knew the new month. So they used to light torches on the tops of the mountains until it got to the end to outside of Israel. And the last mountain in Israel where they lit the torch on top of it was called Sartaba. And that's where he gets the name for his base series.
Now, let me ask you this. So for our viewers, so they can get a mental image, the first one is from the desert.
Right.
Which is located in the north, south?
South.
In the south.
South, right on the border of Egypt.
Okay, wow.
Literally 5 feet from the border of Egypt.
Fascinating. I've been down there. It's amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing. This one that you're now talking about.
This is located in Samaria.
Okay.
It's right across the highway from Shiloh, where the tabernacle was.
Yeah.
Okay.
In English, for those listening, Shiloh. Okay. Otherwise Shiloh, but I like the Hebrew.
Sure. Now, the funny part about this winery is we have the Sartaba, we have Herodian. Herodian was a palace just
Herod.
Over here.
Yeah.
Right? He built himself a palace into a mountain, not on top of it, but from the top down. And you can see it from here. You can see it from the store.
Wow.
Okay? So you can, that's Herodian, is the mountaintop. The next series is Gofna. Gofna was the name of the town where the Maccabees started their war against the Greeks in the time of Hanukkah.
Wow.
Okay? And Masada, which is...
Masada.
Okay, those are their series. Now, the interesting part about this, there's two great stories about this winery. First of all, the winemaker, his name is Dr. Shivi Drori. He has a PhD in plant biology, and he's got his own lab in Ariel University. Okay?
Oh, we have another customer
coming
in.
How
are you, ma'am?
Okay, what's
No, you're doing good. Come on in.
Sorry, we're talking Hebrew too.
No, it's okay. It sounds good for the listeners. And I want to have a nice piece of chocolate in the meantime. God check out Jerusalem Wine Club. This is the best stuff made.
So back to the vote. Two very interesting stories out of this winery. First one, as I said, the winemaker is Dr. Shivi Drori, who has a PhD in plant biology. I had taken a tour from Venezuela to his winery, and one of the guys on the tour said to him, if you have a PhD in plant biology, can you tell me how many grapes does it take to fill a bottle of wine?
Wow, that's a good question.
And the guy said, there's no way to know, because every cluster of grapes, some grapes are small, some are bigger, there's no way to know. Then he goes and tells the story that he went into the archaeological digs. Get this one. The winery is across the highway from Shiloh. So he goes into the archaeological digs by the tabernacle, and he finds an old vine buried in the archaeology.
Wow.
So he takes the vine and he goes back to his laboratory at the university, and he gets his team together and they start doing biological testing on the vine, DNA testing. He says, if we can do what we do in this country with Cabernet and Merlot and Shiraz, can you imagine what we could do if we found our own natural grape, our own native grape?
Wow.
So the guy says, the guest says, you mean those grapes that the spies took? Like those big grapes? He says, yeah. So he says, in that case, I want to change the question. How many bottles of wine can I fill with one grape?
Wow.
Switch it around.
Wow, that's amazing.
Okay, so that's the first story. The second story is that the wine grows from the vines in Shiloh. Now, biblical history tells us that Valentine's Day on the Jewish calendar, otherwise known as Tu B'Av, it's the 15th of the month of Av, was Jewish Valentine's Day. Okay, this was the day when the single girls would all dress in white. They would borrow each other's clothes so you wouldn't tell who was poor and who was rich. They would go dance in the vineyards, and guys would go and pick their brides.
Wow.
Okay, and they would dance in the vineyards of Shiloh.
Wow. Interesting.
Now, the vineyards for this winery are the vineyards of Shiloh. What's the name of this wine?
Vineyard Dance.
Vineyard Dance is a Bordeaux blend, meaning it's got Cabernet and Merlot, and this one has Petit Verdot in it. And it's a blend, therefore a dance, but it's the Vineyard Dance named after the biblical story of Tu B'Av.
Wow, that's great.
Okay.
How all that comes together.
Right. And basically that's the second winery. The third winery is Flom Winery, named after the Flom family. The patriarch of the family, Israel Flom, used to be the chief winemaker for Carmel Mizrahi, which used to make sweet sacramental wine.
Yeah.
Which everybody knows, they think of the kosher wine, they think of that Manischewitz syrup.
Yeah.
That's what they used to make, okay? So his children decided that they wanted to go into the wine industry on a world-class level. So one of the children went to the United States to learn business, and the other one went to Italy to learn how to make wine, and they came and did their, and they now have some of the best wines in the country. President Obama, when he was here in Israel, sat with our president, Shimon Peres, and they had two wines they had at dinner were from these guys.
Wow.
Very high-class stuff. Basically, the great story is that the professor came from Italy to see how his student was doing in Israel. And if you know Israel Flom, he's a big, burly Israeli guy. And the Italian professor says to him, "Your wine tastes a lot like our Italian wine." Now, I don't know if this part is true, but what his response was, I know that his response was true. I don't know if what he said in the response is true. His response was, "You got it all wrong. The Romans came, they conquered our land, they stole our vines, your whole industry is ours."
Wow.
So
that's great.
It's like real Israeli
chutzpah. There's truth to that.
Real Israeli chutzpah, right? Continuing a little further
now. Now, you said this is a really good wine. What's the price?
It's a great wine. 137 shekel. Divided by 3.5 to get to the American dollar.
So I know out of $100 I get
about
$325. Okay. That's not a bad price.
Right. The Herodian, the Vineyard Dance was 110 shekel, and the Kadesh Barnea was 59.
Okay.
Going now, this one is Tzomet Eshta'ol, on the highway to Beit Shemesh. This is where we start my biblical wine tour in Samuel 1. This is where we finish it.
In the
Gvaot Winery outside the Tabernacle. The third one is Tulip Winery. The fourth one, Tulip Winery. Tulip Winery is a very unique place. It doesn't have a lot of biblical history outside, except that the mountain range behind them is where Elijah the prophet dealt with all the idol worshippers of Baal.
Right. I love that guy. Elijah was awesome.
So that's who I'm named after. But basically, the Tulip Winery is based in a town called Kfar Tikva, or the Village of Hope. And it's called the Village of Hope because it was built specifically for people with disabilities, mental disabilities. The whole town.
Wow.
The whole town was built with people for specifically to house people with mental disabilities. So what they did is the winery went in to give these people jobs. Okay? They also manufacture unbelievable products. Unbelievable products. Especially at their price range. This one that we're looking at is just under 100 shekel. So you're talking about $30. Very, very high quality wine.
Yeah.
And that's their Reserve Series.
Now, I can throw in a little side note. Elijah the Prophet, P-R-O-P-H-E-T, modern day is turned into Elijah the P-R-O-F-I-T.
I wish you could say that, but I haven't seen any yet.
You'll get there.
The last winery we're going to look at today.
That chocolate's good.
The chocolate's amazing.
You can taste the little beads.
I'm still excited on it because I've had them in the store for about a week. They're just like amazing. The last one that we're going to introduce you to is from the fifth wine region. This one's just outside of Haifa.
Okay.
So we're
Hype is about, in the north on the coast.
So we're talking about limestone soil. Sand, terra rosa, limestone are the three things that we've done out of four different wine regions. The fifth one is volcanic soil.
Which would be in the north?
On the Golan Heights.
On the Golan Heights.
Okay. Ramada Golan Winery, Golan Heights Winery.
It's very big here.
Golan Heights Winery is the second biggest winery in all of Israel.
You introduced me, actually. You took me to a wine show. Thank you for that.
A pleasure. So, Golan Heights Winery, second largest winery in Israel. They are, the winemaker is ranked in the top 10 winemakers in the world. The winery in the past 2 years has won best winery in the world, both in Italy and in France.
Wow.
And they're based in volcanic soil. Now, part of the reasons that our industry has gone in 20 years from when we opened the first boutique winery and got out of that sweet kosher wine that everybody thinks of as kosher,
yeah,
to winning awards in all the wine competitions around the world. I mean, we have stuff here that just this week won in Grand in Vinalis in France. We have 5 gold medal winners in the store right now.
Wow.
Okay. And I only represent 28 wineries here out of 400 in Israel.
400 wineries?
400 wineries in Israel. And I... And
in this little state.
Right. And I have at least 5 gold medal winners just out of those first 28. We haven't even gotten to the rest of them yet.
Wow.
Okay. So what we're talking about here is the... A lot of crazy stuff goes on in this winery. Crazy good stuff. The guy is... The difference in elevation between the lowest vineyard and the highest vineyard on the Golan Heights is 800 meters.
I don't know...
800 meters is...
It's very tall.
It's not very tall. 800 meters is nothing. It's, I'll do a little bit of a calculation on my thing here while I'm talking about it. The reason that's so important is because 800 meters in difference here, given the different climate change and the... Keep in mind, we're talking 800 meters vertical.
Right.
800 meters vertical, given the different climate change, the different weather, the different temperature... The different soil content, the different mineral content, because even though it's the same volcanic soil, rain washes the minerals down to the bottom, so there's less there than there is up at the top.
Right.
The difference in that 800 meters is the same as the entire 800-kilometer wine region of France.
Wow.
Okay?
Wow.
So we can do that basically very, very simply. 12 meters, just to give you an example, is 39 feet.
That's not... A big difference.
Okay, so if you do 800 meters is 2,000. 800 meters is 2,600 feet.
Wow.
2,624 feet.
Wow.
So we have that capability just in 800 meters to do what their whole country does over there. It's a great industry. We have a lot of stuff to offer the world, combined with the biblical stories of everywhere we're going.
You have just filled us. Ellie, you just in this wine and the history behind where it's is amazing. And I think the listeners are getting an earful. And they'll go back and listen. They're going to have to listen to the show over to really process it. And I say that because there's so much that you've given us that to hear, it's like watching a movie over and over again that you really like.
Right.
And if you love biblical history, if you know, if you want the truth and hunger for the truth, and know and or know the truth already, you've just given us from all the way through the Old Testament.
Yeah. And the interesting part about it is, like, our industry, wine evens out the entire playing field. Everybody likes wine.
Yeah.
Right. It's the one thing that up until very recently has not made any difference whether it's West Bank wine or East Bank wine. Like, nobody cares. It's good wine, we want it.
Right.
And that's it.
Right.
Just very recently that's changing. But, like I said, all of our stuff is available on the Jerusalem Wine Club site. JerusalemWineClub@gmail.com is our email.
Yeah, we're going
to
post that.
Feel free, we'd love to come. And by the way, if anybody's coming over this way, I'd love to give you a personalized tour.
No, that sounds awesome. We're going to do a video. Hey, brother, I appreciate it. God bless you. God bless the patriot conservatives in the United States, the Christians who stand with Israel. God bless Israel as she blesses the world. Thank you for listening.